You're listening to The New Yorker Out Loud. This is Matt Dellinger for NewYorker.com. This week in the April 7th issue of The New Yorker, Richard Brody, who is our goings-on-about-town film editor, writes about the French filmmaker Jean-Luc Godard. Richard is joining us this week on The New Yorker Out Loud. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Matt.
Now, the piece we're running in the magazine focuses on two filmmakers, both Godard and Truffaut, and how the history of their friendship is tied into the history of French New Wave cinema. What made the New Wave different? What was different about the movies being made by Godard and Truffaut?
The first difference is that they had vastly more talent than than most of the filmmakers around them. But the question of how they actually cultivated that talent and got to realize it, that's the story of the New Wave. France was always a movie-crazy country.
Yeah.
And it was in France that the movies were called the sixth art, the seventh art. And many significant artists and writers, Jean Cocteau, Jean Giraudoux, Jean-Paul Sartre, worked in movies.
And the French cinema was very different from the American cinema of its time.
It was. One thing that marked the French cinema radically was World War II.
Mm-hmm.
When the war ended, there was a pent-up desire to see American movies, which flooded the market
virtually
overnight. Something else happened in France. In the mid-1930s, a pair of silent movie enthusiasts decided to found an archive and museum devoted to silent films. This was in the 1930s when silent films had very recently been superseded by sound films and were being melted down for their raw materials.
Wow.
Silent films were being thrown in the garbage, literally.
Wow. Yeah.
Langlois and Franju went around collecting silent films, and the stroke of genius was not just reclaiming them, but showing them.
Right. And this was the...
They founded an institution called the Cinémathèque Française, meaning like the movie library, the French movie library. Langlois turned the Cinémathèque into a crucial institution. He understood very early on that the possibility of seeing films was closely linked with the possibility of making films. Just the way that young painters go to the Louvre to look at and to copy paintings, young filmmakers would need to see the classics of cinema in order to cultivate their taste and their talent.
And this is where Truffaut and Godard started.
Truffaut
out
and Godard were among the... After the war, a bunch of young French people started inhabiting his facility. For certain films, there were only half a dozen seats taken, and two of them were usually taken by Truffaut and Godard, and the other four by friends of theirs. Truffaut and Godard came from diametrically opposite backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Truffaut was born in Paris, born out of wedlock.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty much a neglected child, left to his own devices on the streets of Paris, even during wartime. He had seen a movie at age 8, Paradis Perdu, and from that point on, he was a hopeless cinephile. Godard, on the other hand, was born to a wealthy family. He was brought up in a milieu of material luxury as well as aesthetic refinement. His grandfather was Paul Valéry's personal secretary and close friend.
And so how'd they become friends?
They became friends from movie viewing. Either the two places they most frequently watched movies at were the Cinémathèque and another crucial location, the CCQL, the Ciné Club du Quartier Latin, the Ciné Club of the Latin Quarter, which was run by a French professor and novelist named Maurice Scherrer, who is better known to us by his pseudonym Eric Rohmer. He was already a prominent critic, and his critical writings were something of an inspiration to young people in France who had the ambition to make films. And Godard, Truffaut, as well as their friends Jacques Rivette, Claude Chabrol, and a few others, congregated at the CCQL.
By the time they became critics, were they looking ahead to becoming filmmakers, or was criticism sort of the end for a time?
Well, it seemed very clear to them that they were going to be filmmakers from a very early time. Some people who knew Godard in the 40s said that he came to Paris with the intention of becoming a filmmaker.
I see.
When he was 15, 16 years old. Before he came to Paris, he was fascinated by writings about films. The magazine La Revue du Cinéma, which had fantastic pictures of movies from around the world that he was unable to see and that set him dreaming.
Wow. Hard to imagine in the Netflix age. What was their central argument as critics?
The first new idea that they had was the simple idea of watching movies as the basis for making movies.
Mm-hmm.
And they taught themselves about movies by watching movies. Criticism was partly a continuation of what they used to do, hanging out in cafes. Partly it was a way to get a foot in the door. Because the French film industry was an extremely closed place. place. You needed authorization to shoot, and for authorization to shoot, you needed the approval of the unions, which were under the domination of the Communist Party. The French New Wave, with its enthusiasm for American films, ran afoul of the left.
Mm-hmm. So these two, as critics, had an appreciation of American cinema that they sort of shouted from the rooftops, but also they recognized directors as artists, and that was something new.
The idea of recognizing directors as artists in general was not a new idea, but what was not understood was the extent to which directors working within the Hollywood system were capable of functioning as artists despite the tight control over their work exercised by studios and producers. That was their great discovery.
I see.
They watched films by Alfred Hitchcock, by Howard Hawks, by Otto Preminger. Now, even this expression, a film by, it was really uncommon to talk about films by a director.
It was considered the product of a studio or...
It was considered the product of a studio, and the director was considered a hired gun who dispatched his task with greater or lesser skill. But the critics of the French New Wave advanced an idea that they called the politique des auteurs, the author's policy, which has come to be known in English as the auteur theory. These young filmmakers were setting up a canon that they were looking to take their place in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took another step and said, and that all of these directors are the equals of any artist working in any domain.
So when these two made their first movies, how was that tangible in their films?
That is one of the places where the dividing line between Truffaut and Godard, who had been and remained for a while close friends, began to show itself. Truffaut's first film, The 400 Blows, is an intimate, more or less first-person story about Truffaut's own difficult childhood and adolescence. The direction is skillful, light on its feet, humanistic. It borrows from documentary to a certain extent and from the combination of documentary and fiction that he had seen in the films of Roberto Rossellini, but it's not truffled with movie references. By contrast, Godard's Breathless is a grab bag of movie references. The story of Breathless is not a personal story. The story is based on a true crime story. It took place in France in late 1952. Truffaut had had the idea to make this film in the mid-50s. He and Godard sat on a bench at a metro station and worked out the story. Godard asked Truffaut to elaborate their little outline into a longer story, which Truffaut did, gave it to Godard, who then started writing a script and found that he couldn't do it. Couldn't or didn't want to do it. He didn't like the script he was writing, and so he got rid of it and decided to make the film without a script. He conceived of the day's action every night before the shoot, sometimes even the day of the shoot, sitting in a cafe with scraps of paper sitting around him, quotes from books, things he remembered from films. Because he shot the film silent and dubbed it later, he very often called out the dialogue to the actors while the camera was rolling.
And he presumably he was improvising himself.
The actors weren't improvising, he was improvising.
Right, yeah. Well, it's very, it's kind of taking the auteur idea to the extreme. I mean, not only is the director the author of the film, but his subconscious becomes the author of the film.
That's exactly right. One of the effects of Godard's method is to convey accurately the feeling that the film was being made at the time of its being made.
Right. So and shooting, he shot scenes in public.
He shot scenes in the street without crowd control. The famous scene in which Jean Seberg and Jean-Paul Belmondo are walking on the Champs-Élysées, the cameraman, Raoul Coutard, was sitting in a hand-pushed delivery cart with his camera, which had two holes punched in the front of it, one for the camera, one for Coutard to look out of. An assistant pushed the camera, and Godard walked along discreetly behind it.
Wow.
On the other hand, they had called in journalists to watch this be done, because Godard understood the singularity of his methods and wanted an understanding of them to become a part of the reception of the film. Even before the film came out, his methods were as much of an artistic phenomenon as, for instance, Jackson Pollock's drip painting. He was something of an action director. The spontaneity of his methods resulted in a film that feels something like jazz.
And who's the closest to that today as a director?
It's a good question. And I don't think anyone has the guts to work that way anymore.
Or what generally can we point to today in the cinema we know and say that is the effect of the new wave?
Godard was more of an influence in the 60s. in the 60s, filmmakers like George Lucas, Brian De Palma, explicitly stated their intention of being something like the American Godard.
In fact, Coppola said...
Coppola said recently that that's what got him started all from the very beginning. He wanted to be like Godard. He wanted to be an American New Wave filmmaker. Imitating Godard is impossible. In exactly the same way that for a painter to imitate Jackson Pollock is impossible. It's been done.
Now, the piece this week is kind of about both of them, Truffaut and Godard. You've written your first book about Godard, his life and work. It's called Everything is Cinema. It's coming out in May. Of these two, if you were interested in French New Wave cinema, why him?
Well, I started liking the films of Godard when I was 17, at a time when I did not know that movies existed as something more than Saturday night popcorn entertainment. A friend of mine in college said, "See this," and I saw it and came out transfigured.
What film was that?
Breathless. Uh-huh. At the time, the two things that I was most interested in were jazz and philosophy, and Breathless was the first film I had ever seen that seemed to be both like jazz and like philosophy. Godard is the one filmmaker of the last 50, 60 years who has the same importance, not just in the cinema, but in the world of art in general, that Picasso has in the world of painting and culture, that Arnold Schoenberg has in the world of music and culture, that James Joyce has in the world of literature and culture. Truffaut is not a revolutionary filmmaker. He helped to make a revolution, but the revolution he helped to make was Godard's revolution. Godard came to the cinema with a philosophical orientation. He still is. He's alive and working in Switzerland as we speak at age 77. But in his youth, he was very much devoted to the philosophy of Sartre. And for Godard, film and politics were always indissociable.
In 2000, you wrote a profile of Godard for The New Yorker, which we've put online this week, by the way. And that's what your book grew out of. For that, you went to actually visit him. What was that like? What was he like?
He lives and works in a village called Rolle in Switzerland between Lausanne and Geneva on the lake. It's a charming town with a few cold modern buildings. That's where he is, on the ground floor of a rather charmless building that looks out neither at the lake nor at the mountains. But that is filled with video equipment, CDs, and the day I was there, a television set that was tuned to the French Open.
Really?
Godard is a big tennis fan. In fact, he's played tennis for many years. He's a big sports fan in general, and not enough has been said about the significance of sports in Godard's work.
Huh.
When I met him, we talked for about 3 hours. He was in the process of completing a film, Éloge de l'amour, In Praise of Love, which parenthetically is one of his greatest works. And he knew that it was time to make an appearance in the United States again. The agreement was that I would visit him for 2 days, that we'd do 2 days of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
After the formal interview was done, he showed me some unpublished material. And then he invited me out to dinner. We ate at the outdoor cafe of the restaurant of the hotel where I was staying.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked freely for an hour or two, shook hands and agreed to meet the next morning at 10. When I got to his office the next morning at 10, I found the drapes closed behind the glass door and a note for me taped to the door, in which he said that he couldn't come, in which he denied. He said, "We didn't have a conversation yesterday," and said a couple of other unpleasant things, and then wished me good luck on my interviews in France.
Wow.
On the one hand, I was needless to say upset because I had come to do a job and felt that he was impeding that job getting done. On the other hand, although it was not at all his intention, I felt in some way liberated. One of the pitfalls I think that befalls a lot of people who are writing profiles and doing interviews is that from their conversations, they get the false impression that there's a personal relationship. They're so grateful for the access to someone they admire greatly that they write from a kind of complicity. They lose their power of critical judgment. And I was, despite not getting to speak with him about the things I was holding for the second day, I was grateful for him for breaking any illusion I might have had that a relationship was developing.
He cured that. That's great. Thank you very much, Richard, for joining us.
Well, thank you, Matt.
Richard Brody, his book is called Everything is Cinema. His profile of Godard from the year 2000 is posted on our website, newyorker.com. and his articles in the April 7th issue of The New Yorker, which also features Roger Angel on the changing game of baseball, Khalifa Sana on Obama's church on the south side of Chicago, James Wood on Richard Price, Michael Kinsley on mortality, David Denby's review of Stop Loss, Shouts and Murmurs by Ian Frazier, and Fiction by Ha Jin. You can subscribe to this and other free New Yorker podcasts on our website, newyorker.com, or through the iTunes Music Store, just search for New Yorker. For The New Yorker, this is Matt Dellinger.